You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
So today's idea list of the day from notepad.com, N-O-T-E-P-D.com, is The Doomsday Portfolio by Robin Altucher. And I have with me here Robin.
Yes.
Jay Paolo. Robin, why did you create the Doomsday Portfolio?
I just had to do this research for my portfolio. So I just thought I'd share. Well, it's just, you know, I had to reposition a lot of stocks just to kind of, because of what's happening, you know, with Russia and the Ukraine. And just did a little research on what the effects are going to be for the exports.
See, I'm just curious, when you do this doomsday portfolio, do you see it as long term, or do you see it like maybe like a couple years after the war or tensions?
That's a great question, because, well, a couple years, by the way, for most investors is now considered long term. But right. the question I had for Robin is this very short term? Because what if, I mean, she writes in this, there's three scenarios. Scenario one, Russia takes over Ukraine, like their invasion succeeds for them. And they take over Ukraine. Scenario two is Ukraine succeeds in fighting back and Russia gives up without forcing any concessions at all. And scenario three is, which is one I think we all, well, I guess scenario two also we all hope for, but scenario three is a deal is made and at the very least Ukraine agrees not to join NATO and Russia takes their military out and sanctions will be lifted. So I think that's probably, I don't know which scenario is likely actually. What do you guys think? Which scenario is likely? Or are there other scenarios?
I don't know. I felt like the third one would be more likely. But isn't Ukraine just apply for EU?
They just applied for EU and the EU agreed to kind of fast track them. But you can only fast track so fast. Like I think there's, and Paolo might know, there's something like 27 countries in the EU and you have to basically work out trade agreements, right? With all of them. You have to integrate your banking system with the euro. Like it takes years to actually officially join, I believe.
Plus, there's like five countries, I think, ahead of them or something.
But I think
like
they're going to fast track Ukraine, though.
So what you're saying is it's not going to be end anytime soon, then?
It physically can't. Like Brexit, I don't even know if England is fully out of the EU yet, or if they did, it took them about 3 years to get out.
I can confirm it's fully out right now.
Yeah, but I believe at the end of 2020.
But it took a long time. It took a crazy long time, like last year, like end of last year or something. Yeah.
Wow.
Right. It was like a 4 or 5 year effort because you have to make new trade agreements with every European country because you don't have the EU generic trade agreement with them. And I think the problem was it all boiled down in England and like Ireland and Scotland were having issues with England getting out of the Brexit. I forget all the issues, but there were some weird trade agreement issues where like Northern Ireland was going to get screwed or something like that.
Right. So I think I'm hoping for scenario three, but I think scenario one maybe what's going to happen.
Well, so okay. And Paolo, what do you think?
You know, I don't know. I would think that I would guess either some sort of deal is made, right, or Russia takes over.
Yeah, same with me.
Because
yeah, I kind of. Does anybody think Ukraine can hold them back long enough?
I don't know. I mean, like for the past couple of days, like you see how many cities has been fallen, and they took over the Chernobyl just like that, you know. But at the same time, Russia's morale is really low. Russian morale is really low. But at the same, but even with low morale, it seems like they're still able to take cities.
Well, I guess we don't really, you know, I read articles that say there's low morale, but we don't know if that's true or not.
Who knows if that is true, right? It's right. You don't know where the information comes from. Of course, people
in paper. And look, exactly. Even if those articles are spread with the best intentions in mind, like let's actually, you know, create low morale for the Russian soldiers by saying they have low morale. That might be the reason that article is being spread, but we don't actually know. And the same thing, I do believe those cities have been taken over, but again, we don't know Ukraine's strategy. Like it could be, let's just throw the entire army at Kiev because until they get Kiev, they don't have the country.
Right.
You know, and also what Russia is about to find out is that, you know, there's something like, what is the population of Ukraine? I always have to look it up again. There's something like, there's 44 million people in Ukraine and there's something like 200,000 soldiers that Russia has in Ukraine or on the border of Ukraine. And can they really, if the entire population hates you, can you really hold on to a country?
I don't know. Unless you rule with the iron fist, I guess you can't, right?
I guess that's the fear is that, you know, once Putin is totally in charge, there's going to be, you know, mass murders. But I don't think the Russian people will go for that. It seems like it's like Russia. And now I don't want to insult anyone, but it seems like Russia, Ukraine ethnically are the same. As far as like, it's like England and Scotland. Like, do English people consider Scottish people 100% different than them?
Yes.
I guess they
have been at war in the past.
But yes. My understanding is that there's a part of Ukraine which is ethnically Russian and a part that is not. Right. So it's that's the difference. There's a Russian speaking population who feels somewhat Russian, and there's a part that doesn't. So that's the difference.
Yeah, so that's an important part of what's going on in Ukraine right now, is that starting in 2014, the Russian people who wanted to separate from Ukraine basically have been at war with the Ukrainians in those two regions. So it could be the case that a deal with Russia is they get those two regions and Ukraine agrees not to join NATO. At the very minimum, I think that's what Russia would want in a deal.
Well, that's still going to affect then trade with wheat and these things, because I think they fall into that area.
Yeah, and even if they don't, I mean, it's going to have Russia, you know, you never know if there's going to be... I think the problems you point out is that, A, this war might not go well for Ukraine, in which case there's going to be all sorts of sanctions and so on against all these critical commodities, which we'll talk about in a second. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about what stocks and investments can potentially benefit. B, even if Russia backs out but gets some concessions, you're never really going to be able to trust that Russia is not going to invade again or do some other things. And there's a third point here too, which is that Ukraine's already been affected. Like, they can't do a harvest this year if there are tanks on the roads, for instance, because they need, you know, farm equipment on the roads.
Right.
So that's going to affect...
So this year's, done.
Yeah, like they supply a lot of the wheat and grains in the world, both Russia and Ukraine. So wheat prices have been soaring. And we'll talk about that in a second. But also, I didn't know they also provide a lot of sunflower seeds and vegetable oils and...
I thought southern states are the one that provided all that. Like Florida or...
That's Michigan, the Florida orange juice commercial. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think the U.S. really provides a lot of anything. We just kind of buy everything.
We do.
Which is why our trade deficit is so high.
Also, do you know what so many people call it the Ukraine instead of just Ukraine? Because it's not like you say the Italy, you know, or the France. Right.
Why Ukraine,
everyone says that. I don't know.
I know. That's weird.
Yeah, like I just said that. So.
Oh, you did?
Probably. I've been trying to correct myself by saying Ukraine, but
that it's wrong. Maybe it's right, but it's interesting that they would be the countries called that.
First off, What was your point? Are these companies you think are investments for the long term or for the short term? Like, before we say the investments, what could be the problem with owning these investments?
Well, I mean, this stuff I research, I've been researching it for a while. So a lot of it is pretty high if you buy it now. But I bought high. I don't typically do that. I just, for me personally, I feel that there's going to be a long-term effect for all of these commodities. So I'm just, even though they are high, I'm still going for them. So,
well, it's interesting because, well, first off, it's, what's interesting is they're high because since the invasion, hedge funds have been obviously loading up on these. But what's interesting there is that they didn't start loading up, it seems, until a few days ago.
Right.
So the next time there's a world crisis, it does seem that there will be an opportunity to load up. So it would have been good to make a list like this earlier, obviously, because the same information was available. But, you know, now I do think that these are even though like wheat, for instance, is high, it's a good long-term play because I was reading that the wheat harvest in Ukraine, best case, is going to be about 30% lower than it was a year ago because of what's been going on now. And worst case, obviously, it goes to zero. So, and on top of that—
And that's just Ukraine.
Yeah, well,
not even to mention the 7% from Russia or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Russia is a huge supplier of wheat. So not to mention, we hit an all-time high a year ago in April of 2021 because of high demand. So like worldwide demand for wheat has been going up anyway, and now this will further hit supply. So, you know, essentially over the past year, it's up, wheat as an example is up 50%, but that's probably like, it's probably not going lower anytime soon. It might go lower a little bit if this scenario resolves peacefully, but it's in the long term, the demand is there, and Ukraine and Russia are going to have supply problems for years to come after this because of sanctions, because of infrastructure being damaged from the invasion, and so on. So, okay, what's your first investment?
So my first one is corn. I mean, I think all of these are important. Corn, wheat, those are both ETFs.
Yeah, so corn is spelled CORN is the ticker symbol. It's an ETF that holds corn futures. Wheat, WEAT, it's the ticker symbol, holds wheat futures. And again, corn and wheat are, that is the biggest export of, it's 20% of Ukraine's exports.
What's interesting is that China is their largest buyer.
Oh, what?
From Russia and Ukraine. Like a lot, by a lot.
So that means China buys most of the wheat that Ukraine is selling is going to China?
I believe that's what I saw. Or it's Russia.
You know, also, if you combine Russia and Ukraine...
Yeah, China.
That is 30% of total world wheat exports. So if Russia does succeed in either taking over Ukraine or causing huge supply chain issues for Ukraine, combined with all these sanctions on Russia, I mean, that's 30% of a commodity or two commodities, corn and wheat, that demand has been rising for. So that's, even if you're buying high right now, it seems like it's a good long-term play.
So even Russia's trade, it is number one is China is their biggest.
Yeah, because I guess U.S. doesn't necessarily buy those things, but
U.S.
But
we're number four, yeah.
But you know what though? It's tricky to think that way because you could say like with oil as an example, which is another thing you talk about on this list. Just because the U.S. does not buy a lot of oil from Russia doesn't mean we aren't affected because worldwide, you know, oil and corn and wheat, these are global commodities and there's only one price for them. So it's the same price all over the world. So just because China's the buyer, let's say, from Russia and we're not as much a buyer, the price goes up, which affects, you know, all the citizens of the world for when oil prices go up or corn prices go up. So it affects a lot of different things, but certainly the corn and wheat ETFs could go up regardless of the U.S. dependency on them. Talk about iron and you know, I didn't know Ukraine was a big iron exporter, but apparently they are.
Yeah, so is Russia.
Also, I'm curious, one of the items in the list, not really the idea list, but that table that she added is ores, slag, and ash. What is ash? Like, I know what ash is, but it doesn't seem like a commodity to me.
So ores, slag, and ash are all basically byproducts of the process of getting iron. Or I'll give you an example. We know this guy who his business was collecting garbage. And why did he collect garbage? It's because he would go through the garbage and find all the slag and ash, like all the kind of steel where he could extract iron from the steel and then sell it onto the commodities market. So it's kind of a byproduct of, I guess, the steel making process or the process of mining iron, one of those things. But the top importers, the top buyers of ores, slag, and ash, it's a category, were China, Japan, South Korea, Germany, and the Netherlands. So obviously these are all huge customers of Ukraine or Ukraine and Russia, and they're gonna be greatly affected by this. And you use these things for anything that you need steel for. So for instance, car companies are in Germany and Japan, for instance, are not gonna be able to get all the supplies they need, like the parts they need, because these things are made out of, you know, the ultimately iron. So this is where the company Cleveland Cliffs comes in, CLF ticker.
Right. Yeah.
Also, I didn't know this. I thought, so Ukraine is a big supplier of rare earth minerals as well.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I thought India was. I didn't know they Ukraine are was. Oh.
Yeah, China's the biggest, by the way.
Well, that's because they took over Tibet and that area.
Oh, yeah, because it's in the mountainous regions, right?
Yes.
Right. And number two, like they didn't, you think about it, why would they take over Tibet? They don't really care about, the Dalai Lama just want or Buddhism. They wanted, right. Yeah, the rare earth minerals.
Rare earth minerals. And that's why India also, because that's on the other side of the mountain.
But by the way, I believe number two exporter is Greenland. And there's a company, Greenland, I think it's called Greenland Natural Resources or Greenland yes. Mining Company.
Yep.
And China owns that.
Yeah. Yep.
And so rare earth minerals, just if people don't know, these are, as it says in the name, they're rare. And that's why it's kind of important to know which countries sell them. And they're used in almost everything you do. Like they're used for batteries. They're used for semiconductors. They power the electric grid. Like rare earth minerals.
If we want to have EVs, you know, electric vehicles, that's what we need.
Yeah. Yeah, well, anything.
Like iPhone, yeah.
Yeah, so like if the world didn't have rare earth minerals, you could just shut the lights out. Now, I remember one time I had Naveen Jain on the podcast and he was starting a space exploration company where his goal was to get to the moon because the moon is not on Earth. The moon, it turns out, has a lot of rare earth minerals. And so that was his goal, was to find ultimately a cheaper way through space travel. I don't ever know what happened to that company, but in any case, in the US though, the only company that is mining and processing rare earth elements is MP Materials, MP. So I will look into that stock. These are not necessarily recommendations, just things to look at because the situation's so scary. And I do think, Robin, to your point, is that people are gonna start looking to alternatives to
right.
You know, we're not as global as we thought we were.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're too dependent on other country. I felt like, you know, that's a pro and cons of globalizations, right? You depend on other countries on certain things.
Which right. We have a global economy, so we've been pretty good at that. And you know, and I'll just throw in one other thing. You know, lithium is used in every battery, but a lot of lithium comes from places like China, and also lithium comes from Ukraine and Russia.
Okay, but China owns 80% of all lithium right now in the world.
Right, so if China is looking at this, you know, crisis to see how they're going to handle Taiwan, it's about time we start weaning off of China for lithium.
That brings me to a point from yesterday that I was trying to find a pure play lithium company because we actually have like the largest in the U.S. in Nevada for a lithium mine.
Oh.
And I found out yesterday that it's all owned by the Chinese.
Oh, so they just come in.
They're all
in
Chinese
like, hey.
Companies that are Canadian, and I researched these companies, and they all of them went right to China.
Okay, but there's one company that owns a lot of land in Nevada where they have found lithium. Where so most people don't know this, but Howard Hughes bought an enormous, like hundreds of thousands of acres in Nevada back in the 60s because he wanted to build casinos. He wanted to basically take over Las Vegas. And all that land was consolidated after he died into something called the Summa Corporation, which owns a big chunk of LTUM, the Lithium Corporation. And that is, I believe, an American pure play.
I haven't researched that one yet. I didn't
have
that
time. That one's an American pure play. You know, the Summa Corporation is a private company. It's all owned by Howard Hughes' family, like his distant cousins. And LTUM is a pure play lithium company here. It is weird, though, that another company called Lithium Americas, just like Greenland Natural Resources, is owned by China.
Yeah, it's a Canadian company. So whenever you see a Canadian company, you need to really do your research. It typically, you follow the road to China.
So any other points you want to make on this doomsday portfolio? I do think it's interesting for people to start analyzing, you know, what you do in different macro world scenarios. Like the greatest investors of all time, like George Soros, Carl Icahn, Warren Buffett, they always have a macro perspective on the world. Not as much Buffett, actually. More investors like Soros. But,
but macro isn't like the, like what's a top level?
No, macro, like what's going on geopolitically. So like Buffett doesn't care as much. He looks for brands. He looks for things you can't necessarily predict. Like what's a brand that's going to be around 20 years from now? It's probably a good investment now. That's how he thinks about a lot of these things. He doesn't necessarily make daily investment decisions based on global politics, but George Soros, whatever anyone thinks of him, is a successful investor, and he does think a lot about global politics.
I just think that this is going to change a lot of people. Like with me, I feel like things that go through what I'm thinking, you know, a lot of people are thinking. And I want to support the pure plays, you know, like if I'm in France, I want to support the, you know, a French company. Or if I'm in the US, I want to support a US company. I think people are going to start to do that because that'll help their countries.
What is the definition of a pure play?
Oh, one that's just owned by just purely, let's say, a French company, if you know, or purely a U.S. company with no ties and no money coming from China or from Russia or from, you know, other places.
Okay, makes sense.
The Canadians have really brought in people from China. I mean, they've made trade deals with them, and they have for a long time. So most Canadian companies, I would say, you really look at them and take a deep dive into it because you'll be surprised.
Well, because the U.S. has a lot of trade restrictions on China. And this is how the world works, really, underneath all the rules and regulations, is that everybody just winks at each other. So like when we put trade restrictions on China, a little bit of it is a wink because they go to Canada, which doesn't have the same trade restrictions on China.
Right.
Now, we could have probably forced Canada to have the same restrictions, but we didn't because we still need these things that China provides.
Right.
So that's the issue. Like we don't necessarily, refine lithium the way China does. And all our electronic products like iPhones are made in China. So China needs lithium.
So just recently there was a Canadian company that was bought by the Chinese government, a lithium mining company, and Canada let them do it. It just blows my mind.
Wait, so I mean, if by the logic, so if we just buy whatever that China is buying, would we be making money?
Well, they're just cornering the market.
Well, right. Well, no, again, though, they need lithium because they make iPhones, cars, you know,
right,
everything.
But they don't need 80% of the world's, you know, lithium right now.
But to your point, Robin, they want to be not dependent on the rest of the world. So that's why they're kind of smart.
They want the rest of the world to be dependent on them.
Yeah.
And this is what their play is, and with wheat now. So this is what's so scary is that, you know, they'll bring us to our knees.
Well, you know, the one thing is, though, well, I guess this is why China and Russia, we have to look at, like, what's happening in their relationships because China gets so many of their critical commodities from Russia and Ukraine. So this
That's
is why
right.
China doesn't necessarily bash this invasion. I mean, there's many reasons, but this is certainly one of them.
Right.
And, by the way, if you're thinking about getting a new car, I'd probably try to get that new car now because certainly the price of a car is going to go up if iron and steel are going up.
I should just move. I just should just move down to Georgia and buy a car right away.
You should do everything we suggest and then buy these stocks for your portfolio. So,
yes.
All right. The Doomsday Portfolio. We didn't list all the investments, but you can check it out at notepd.com. And Robin Altucher is the author of that idea list. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.